This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 79. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. Whether we're talking about epic fantasy or urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything and everything in between, we always try to bring you the best and brightest authors from the various corners of the fantasy book world when we're here on the show. As always, I try to kick off each week's episode with my own personal author update, and I'm excited about the pending launch of Huntress Initiate, which will be coming out in the next week after this episode comes out. It's the first book in the Huntress Clan Saga, a brand new series for me. It's been a long time coming. I've been filling you in with updates on what's been going on with writing this book for probably the last 4 or 5 months. So if you check back episodes of the podcast, you'll probably hear me talking about working on a long urban fantasy project, and that's really been causing me challenges, shall we say, because writing is not all picking daisies, folks. So stay tuned here for more updates as we go along. You can always check out more information on what I'm up to by visiting my fan group on Facebook. That's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you all, and I hope you will continue to check out what's going on here on the show and both there and over at my site and Facebook group. So for this week's show, we're going to be interviewing Ed White. And Ed is an artist and a writer, and he's worked in the comics industry for over a decade. Telling stories has always been part of his life. He started drawing cowboys and bike scramblers, spaceships and fierce battles, and after that transitioned to drawing superheroes. Then with the help of some school, he started writing stories and chose characters that he was drawing as the subjects, the protagonists of those stories. And this led him to really building an entire universe, a fleshed out continuum in the novels he writes today with his partners at A First Salvo Studio. World building is fun, especially when it isn't for school, he says. So check out my chat with Ed. It's coming up next. Ed White, it's great to have you here on the show here at the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Why don't you take a few minutes and introduce yourself to the readers and people out there in the podcast audience. Let us know who you are and maybe a little bit about how you got started writing.
All right. I'm Ed White, as you mentioned, and I've been publishing and drawing for quite some time, working in the comic industry primarily. I have done ghostwriting, so although I don't use any of my names, I've done work with others, you know, basically oversight to some degree, not full-out writing of a book in terms of writing someone else's book, but it's partially a consultation type of thing. From the comic standpoint, basically, most of the 2000s, we've been doing that myself and studio partners in A First Salvo, and mainly self-published indie comics, although we did get involved in the artist production side of things, flatting, coloring, and the like. But I've always been drawn to, pun not intended, writing itself. Well, from a young age, I was basically taught at home as well as in school, and my auntie, my mom, my grandmother, all on that side, they took it upon themselves to further my schooling, and they always saw me drawing all kinds of things they didn't necessarily like. Like, my mom always thought that Darth Vader was the devil, but not from so much a crazy religious standpoint, but that it was something kids, real young kids, shouldn't see until she watched the movie herself at the prodding of her sister, my aunt. And I basically began writing stories to better my comprehension and grammar and spelling, and doing something that I enjoyed, funny enough, led to learning, which you are starting to see in more progressive schools nowadays. So that's been most of my life. And once the comic industry got into somewhat of a rut and a lot of political natured things that hurt the industry to a large degree, and paper costs, falling readership, the entire industry just kind of folding in on itself due to higher costs versus the prices of games, free games, and a whole bunch of media that's available on your smartphone. I don't think the industry took to looking at smartphones, tablets, and the like as a means to further explore and expand the comic industry and accessibility to comics. And on the flip side of that, one of the last things we did on a large scale with comics was work with Comicology. And they then did so well that Amazon purchased them. When that happened, there was a lot of discussion about what we would do in terms of publication. Kindle started up, Kindle Unlimited, a few years later, and it was right at that point that we were looking at publishing. And one of the partners has a good friend who's also an author. He dipped his toe into the market, and it was not as troubling or troublesome as someone might think. There's always the side of, well, how much can you do in an industry like this, and how much might you get taken advantage of? But Amazon has proven to be as upfront as any other means of publication. 70-30 splits, all of those things involved in KDP has turned out to be no real different than what you would face working with major publishers that we had dealt with in the comic side, not so much in the publishing industry. So that basically rounds out my past experience. I've always wanted to pare down as much as possible a limit to the interruptions of, or the, I guess, the hands of others in your work. And writing a novel really tends to do that. You still have various editors to look over at developmental, grammar, spelling, and the like. But when you go to the full publishing industry in terms of novels, there can be a lot of blowback, a lot of people pushing what is popular. And so it's harder to break in. Kindle's really opened that up. It allows the readers to decide. And similarly, the ability to just tell your story, make sure, of course, that it's edited really well, and take out, you know, things that you may not find boring, but others might, or things where you're going down a rabbit hole of something that you enjoy that others might not, is where a developmental editor comes in. And my past history of doing things like that, I felt would benefit each of us. So here we are with Kindle and pushing ahead with our history of self-publication and the success that can be garnered from that, and moving forward basically with readers in mind and a communication you can have with readers.
I think that's great. And I like, you know, the way you came about that, because, you know, you're really right. It is the readers have really evened the playing field for the indie authors out there. There was a long time when people would try to get traditionally published and they would get shot down and told things like, nobody's reading vampire romances anymore. Nobody's reading stories about shapeshifters. Then you turn around and Kindle comes out and Amazon and all the other ebook publishers, and you suddenly find out that, wow, there are a ton of people reading vampire romances out there. There are a ton of people reading stories about shapeshifters. And there are authors now making solid six-figure incomes because they didn't have to listen to some traditional publisher who thought they knew the market. And it's just interesting. You know, it's really, really leveled things out and let the reader, like you said, choose what the market will bear. And it's interesting to see that it bears a lot more things and a lot more diversity than the traditional industry in publishing would have you think.
It does. One of our partners was very much into Space Marines, and there was so little of it. But you see that a lot of the sci-fi is military sci-fi, and it's Space Marines. There's prolific authors writing and living off of that. And then the first experience we really had was Indiegogo and Kickstarter, Patreon a little while later, that that was the earliest in terms of media like cartoons, games, and comic books as well, that yes, there is an audience out there and they will pay you for it, all the way to like not so much the Firefly movie, Serenity, but to a degree, but very much the Veronica Mars movie. And then you have Cannon Busters, which began with LaShawn doing animation Kickstarter projects, and it all coming all the way to flourishing on Netflix now.
Yeah,
so there's a huge change.
It is really, and the market has, you know, evened up there in the film and TV market. Just so many things I think has opened up for creatives out there. And I like something you talked about your company, A First Salvo, which is your production or studio.
It's more of a studio than a company because we're all loosely affiliated.
Right.
It was a company for a while, but that's not so much what we are.
Okay. Well, I mean, I like the title there on the about page. The very last thing there that describes it is it's a studio of like-minded writers and artists, and I like that because that's one of the things that I look for in collaborations and in partnerships and things that I've done in writing is that there are opportunities to find like-minded people who write similar stories, who enjoy the same types of character development or the same types of genres that you like. And there's opportunities to work together that would never have existed before.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about battle avatars. You know, I have a series of lit RPG / game lit books, and I'm, you know, I love the genre. I read some of your book already. I'm digging into it a little bit more after we get done here. But I just love everything about the genre, and you've done a good job of capturing really the key parts of it in a pretty engaging story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, from the background, I had one of the earliest, the little red booklets of the original Dungeons and Dragons player manual, with the man with the sword and the shield going up against a red dragon. And it's one of the few things where I don't know exactly where it came from. I mean, I know where I was when I got my He-Man. I know my different Transformers, G.I. Joe, and the rest. But when it comes to that, I really don't know where it comes from, particularly from the time period and the whole Darth Vader is the devil thing. How the heck did I get a hold of Dungeons & Dragons when that was during a prolific time of, children are going missing and it's satanic and such? Well, maybe a little bit after that flurry of it, but certainly enough. And I always wanted to play in the group that I had of friends, but we never seemed to get down to it. But it was years later, closer to college and during college, that I really got into that. And of course, playing all the video games. And flash forward to things like Red Dead Redemption and Far Cry, playing games that were very open world, finally opened up the video game, online game playing that I felt was something I'd been waiting for. When I came across the genre of lit RPG game lit, I saw that from a writer's standpoint, first off, you could info dump without it being info dumping. That was one particular interesting point, that readers wanted information like that and they wanted clarity, whereas traditionally it would be classified largely as info dumping. As long as you're not overdoing it, that was one aspect from the writer's standpoint, but from someone who loved gaming and from telling stories for so many years, it did open up the whole adventuring scenario. And as a first salvo, as a universe, the Salvoverse, there's at least 20 years now of background world building. And lit RPG really allows you to put the mechanics of how you construct stories into the story, and the readers want it. Why this character can do what this character can do, and why this location functions the way it does, or a device, or magic. Yes, there's Brandon Sanderson, others who do very complex magic systems, but lit RPG really is breaking it down. I certainly didn't get into this for math, as I continue to joke, but the use of spreadsheets and things to keep everything under control as you progress and make sure that everything's consistent is where the, you know, the joking about math comes along. But then we have a spreadsheet doing it. There is no math involved because it's doing the calculations. But I really enjoy the portal fiction fantasy side of it, because the Narnia books were some of my earliest books that I read. I've always liked and always had these stories and ideas of going into other worlds, things like Labyrinth, the movie, and others. It has that sensibility to it that, I don't know, this people read to escape, and this is a literal example of it. There's no better way to say that, really.
No, but so, you're right. It's a lit RPG stories, especially the portal fantasy stories, are really stories where you're reading to escape by reading about someone who's getting into a game to escape. And so you really are living vicariously through them in a very real way that, you can imagine yourself. I mean, I think it's just such a natural progression for this genre to spring out of, everything being so big with the video gaming platforms and video games themselves having budgets that are larger than major feature films nowadays.
Yes.
And that just tells you what type of marketplace they have. And all of those gamers have at some point said, well, I wonder what it would be like if it was me in that game. And not just me playing a character in that game with my joystick. And I think that's the thing that really makes it capture a group of people that might not otherwise be reading much.
Agreed. There's almost two generations of it now. And Battle Avatars plays into that. Some of the characters we have, because of the length of time and their progression and aging in reality, It's not a Marvel DC type of discussion where, oh, Spider-Man never grows up, Superman never grows up. The necessity for those characters to be relatively unchanging is important to them as icons. But within the progression of our characters and time periods or stories we wish to tell, we do have characters age up, have kids. And so part of that is that if we're telling a story of a certain standpoint in time, period-wise, Battle Avatars plays off of that too, where this, you've got a generation now that's grown up with this type of thing as their reality and technology-wise and such. So that's one standpoint from a behind-the-scenes factor. But Battle Avatars itself takes place in Lenscape. And Lenscape is this manufactured environment that may or may not be so, without spoilers for book one. And that David Gray, who's sick and tired of his job, the routine of his job, the boredom of his job, the fact that he feels that his best friend has left him behind at this place where they both worked only to earn money until the dream was going to be made manifest. And so many people, I'm sure, can associate with that and empathize. And so David takes the opportunity as an invite from his best friend, Jonesy, Daniel Jones, his real name, to go into the game and play like they used to in college. So I take a little bit of that from doing D&D in college. Not that it was video, not that there weren't video games, but it certainly wasn't the type of video games you have now. Maybe Earthworm Jim. But the scope of Lenscape, what it is, who's behind it, what is it, plays out into the wider universe for those who are interested in such things, for like epic fantasy. But then for fans who want to enjoy lit RPG or game lit, that caters to you. And then there is the, which we haven't really mentioned, is the cultivation or Zanzia or Wuxia adventure that I absolutely am into. Jademan Comics is a Hong Kong comics company created by a very intriguing man who did many things to keep himself afloat, along with, I guess, from the political standpoint, even though Hong Kong has always been separate from China, the nature of the culture there. And he started Jademan Comics out of his own childhood characters that he created. He was always drawing. So there's a similarity there that I hadn't known until more recent decade or so. So I should say more recent years, but it's not. It's been about a decade. Tony Wong. When I experienced those comics, I saw some of the anime influences of it, although it was Chinese, not Japanese. And of course, I'd grown up on all the giant mech stuff, Robotech, Voltron, of course, the Transformers, and then delving into manga itself in Japan, and not actually knowing that Jaban was actually manhwa, but that it was produced in the States. So I just thought it was some American companies probably reprinting something from somewhere, then learned more. I really got into the Eastern fantasy epics, and there is a heavy influence on that. And Dragon Ball Z is probably the best example for anyone to understand. It's, you know, standing there screaming and your power erupts, and then you go up to a higher progression and a higher progression. Power creep can be a problem in terms of any storytelling where your character becomes overpowered too quickly, you know, OP. But I liken it to progression of character and a character arc. And over the course of something like a novel and a series of novels, you can manage that. And how many books can you really produce in the first place without having to worry about someone becoming so godlike that you can't tell a story? Because from a writer's standpoint, it is hard to write such stories that they can do seemingly anything. So that kind of, as vague as I could be about Battle Avatars.
No, I get it. You don't want to give away spoilers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. My solution for that was to do my series in two trilogies, where I took one character through a progression in my world, and then he puts the game away and grows up, and his later 15, 16 years down the road, his daughter grows up and finds the game in the attic, and, you know, kind of the Jumanji kind of thing, finds the old game, gets sucked back in. So she ends up going back into the world and leveling up and trying a different class. Like, you know, she scoffs at the class her father had chosen.
I enjoy doing that as well. I mentioned it earlier, but I enjoy that as well, where you've got the legacy aspect and the continuation, and having characters that someone already understands and then they feel closer to by way of that, or even in some cases, you know, from comics, the crossover, that if you have characters, the parents might come back later, and then you've got that, you know, the cavalry moment when, you know, the current protagonist is being taken down, and you can have familiar characters come back to help. That has a large emotional impact on readers as well, or viewers, or whatever the case may be in what media you have.
No, and I completely built that in, because it was, you know, they were upset that she disappeared, figured out where she went. And what do parents do when their kids disappear? They go after them. So,
yeah,
you know, and they spend three books chasing one, just literally one town behind her. So,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to write, and got my angsty parent moments out of the way, because I had teenagers at the time I was writing that. They're a little bit older now. But yeah, it's, you know, and that comes back to story. I mean, like you said, there's a point where you can no longer write in a given series, because you've told the stories that are there to tell, and you've built the main character to a point where they really are risk becoming overpowerful, especially in a game lit setting. And then the challenge is, what are the new challenges for this character? What are the new things you can throw in their path? In a fantasy world, you have some more freedom with doing that, because you can come up with just about anything to throw in their path. But at the end of the day, you can't be contrived, or the reader will not enjoy it as much.
Exactly. I would say we have a built-in defense for that, but it then borders on crossing over. Like, you don't want to cross over into other genres. And so to some degree, that's built in with the Xianzia aspect of it, because that is, it's open-ended towards higher levels, but there is an arena for people at that level if people enjoy Battle Avatars enough to get there. I'll say it that way, I suppose, because, as I said, the Salvoverse, there is a larger world and there is a connectedness, so I do intend to do that, but not from a standpoint, because it's readers first. It's not from a standpoint of, oh, you have to read all of this, to understand that, and, you know, make sure you know about so-and-so's auntie. That's overwhelming for people. You want to continually breed a familiar atmosphere for new readers to enter.
And that's a challenge, but I one of the things I try to do, and I know a lot of authors do this, is try to create, especially in longer series, create other entry points so that new readers can come in the middle of the story, in the middle of the series in some points, and say, oh, okay, I can pick up here, and then I can go back and read the other stuff before this,
yes,
but I'm not lost because it starts sort of fresh in that area and goes forward, and exposition of the past storyline is brought out as needed.
Exactly. I mean, it's something that we've considered many a time, not just within a, say, a continuing series, but if you have interconnected books, someone feeling they have to read something else. And it's also about, you know, is stuff connected or not, and having the surprise of finding people that you might be familiar with. I think there was a recent book by, I'll leave out the author's name, but it was mentioned between the two authors' books, and it was said enough times that the worlds are connected, and a couple of people were confused about whether or not the two books were united, and you have to keep that in mind as you're writing the book as well. Because the surrounding media or even the use of Google may not be something that the reader has time or feels has time to look into. So, you know, there's back matter and things for that in the books as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've handled that with the Salvoverse and giving you yourself an opportunity to have a broader world where you can write other stories in the same world that don't necessarily touch upon or touch upon much stories.
Absolutely.
In other areas. And I've done that too. And I think that that's a brilliant way to kind of handle the desire to write different genres, for instance.
And there's a shorthand as well.
Right.
You know how certain things function, but then readers might also.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. So Battle Avatars Book 1 just came out in September, right?
Yes.
Excellent. What's what are plans for Book 2?
At the moment, I'm looking at the 18th for the pre-order to start for 1 week in of this month, November, and to have it release, you know, go live the following week, the following Monday. Everything's wrapped up with edits. I have a few developmental comments to still feed in, and then if there isn't any major change and rewrite and a minor edit to check those changed sections of the book, then the November 18th is the pre-order launch.
Excellent. Well, that'll be right around when this episode is released. This will come out right before that comes out, or just after that book comes out. But is it going to be just Battle Avatars Book 2, or do you have a title?
The Forlorn Earth.
Ooh.
Is the subtitle.
Very nice. So, and then Book 3 already in the works?
Yes. I may work on another title called Vagabond Crow, which is a pure Xianzia set in ancient China, set in other worlds as well, because the whole idea of Xianzia, of course, is you do go to other realms and spirit worlds and hell and so forth. So I may take a little time to get that ready for launch next year as well, which might slow down Book 3 by a month or so. But Book 3 is planned out. It's all plotted, and essentially sections of it are already written, where at that point David pursues a legendary items that you get introduced in Book 1 and in Book 2, find out more about himself and what is going on, with a nice chunky surprise at the end. And if, like I said, if readers are responding well, then I will continue with that as well, because it's a lot of talk is that people in our market, in self-publishing, if something isn't viable, then books get abandoned. And as new authors, you're always struggling for, you know, reviews, word of mouth, and further promotional activity. But I feel that a commitment to readers is a big part of that, and your consistency. So, you know, you and in any industry, planning out 3-4 books, you're reaching for the sky, and you have to be cautious about reality. But basically, budgetary wise, all of the costs involved, advertising, editing, the book covers and so forth, I have 6 books planned, and that would wrap up sizable story, but the book's doing fairly well, and I intend to continue. So I have the book three cover underway as well, and I want to be able to schedule Vagabond Crow and Battle Avatars in a comfortable writing schedule.
Excellent. Well, I think that you've touched on an important thing there, and it's something that I make that commitment to my readers too, that I will write. I tend to write in trilogies, even in longer series that I have. There are trilogy story arcs built in, so that I can end at a certain point, and I will write the three books that I'm going to write for a series, and that'll finish up the story arc. So at least they're not left hanging with major plot points.
I felt too. Some people say don't push it as a trilogy, because then readers think it's over and there's no more. But there's a lot of readers that say, you see it in on Reddit and of course Facebook and other social media. I want a complete series I can read. And so you have some percentage of the audience who are waiting for something that's complete so they can binge it like a Netflix thing. So that's important from that standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touch on the fact that there are different types of readers. There are readers who will read along. There are readers who read maybe a book a month, maybe only five or six books a year, maybe, or even less. And so they're perfectly happy with you releasing, every 3 months or, twice a year or whatever. There are other readers who read more than that and want more books faster. And then there are those readers who binge and don't only read completed series or only read completed story arcs. And it's important for you as an author to know who you're talking to. So when you complete a story arc, you can make a note of that in the description so they know that up front that, this trilogy is complete. And then at the end of the third book, you can say this will continue in another trilogy, but or in another part of the series. But this part is finished. And, so there are different ways. It's all about marketing and stuff. And we could probably keep talking forever, Ed. But why don't you tell us a little bit about where people can find you online?
There's Facebook, Ed White Author, and the Battle Avatars page as well. When you search for that's on Facebook, and www.afirstsalvo.com is the site, and that's pretty much it other than Instagram, which is the First Salvo, and that's generally one of us posting something. Sometimes it's me, but Instagram tends to be doodles and drawings that we do, because Instagram is more of a visual place. Whereas on Facebook, I maintain my presence as Ed White myself, posting stuff about the book and a bit about me here and there, art-wise, that I like. And of course, there's also the First Salvo Facebook, and that will post updates about what we have going on and any sort of update. And then, of course, there's my link to, I guess I should mention, Patreon, which is the First Salvo Patreon. And we basically benefit from that, focusing on the book releases, so that those who want to know more about the book and early release of chapters as we progress forward, Patreon's a place to support us so that we can maintain things like the site expenses and all those studio-related issues. That's pretty much it.
Excellent. Well, I will make sure that we have links to your website and talk a little bit about that and in the show notes for this episode, links to your Facebook page and everything else we've talked about. They can find that way. Ed, thanks for coming on the show, and best of luck with the upcoming release of book two. That's exciting. I've got to get reading, so I've got book one finished and can dig in.
All right. And your books are under Jamie West, Jamie Davis?
They are. Jamie Davis. I write the Accidental Traveler series and the Accidental Champion series for Lit RPG.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
let me try that out myself.
Check it out if you want. Always happy to hear what you think of that. Ed, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy-focused community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, you'll find links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile app for iOS or Android, and even by email if you want. So make sure you do that so you don't miss any of the episodes. We've got some amazing, awesome authors coming up in the next few months. Our next episode features Daryl J. Ball. You won't want to miss any of these upcoming authors. We have a lot of fun chatting about fantasy books and the books we're reading, the books we're writing on this show. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. I have my Facebook page at Jamie Davis Books. Of course, my Facebook fan group where we talk about everything to do with fantasy books in Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. And of course, my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want, you can get a free copy of one of my books just for signing up to join my newsletter over there for updates. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, don't forget, folks, you've got to keep your eyes open out there because there's magic all around you.